Hello and welcome to Radio SGN. I am one of your humble hosts, A.V. Eichenbaum. With me, as per usual, is Lindsay Anderson.
Hello.
Hello, Lindsay. How are you?
I'm doing great. I actually have some big news that I would like to share with our listeners this week.
Go ahead. What do we got?
So, as you, dear listeners, may or may not know, my dog, Peter, is a drag queen, an award-winning drag queen in Seattle. And, well, I've got some big Peter news today.
Do please share.
Yes. So recently we DNA tested Peter to find out what type of dog he really is. I've been saying that he's a tweenie for, God, the last 8 or 9 years, as long as I've had him, really. And the DNA results came back and it turns out he's not a tweenie. He has no weenie in him whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Peter is 60% Chihuahua, and then 30% Rat Terrier, and 10% Miniature Pinscher. So he is a miniature Rat Wawa, which is just, I mean, I'm glad we know his true self. He's being open with the world, which is, you know, everything that you could hope out of a drag queen dog. But it is disappointing as well because his drag name is Patricia Chiweenie, and now I just feel like he's appropriating Chiweenie culture every time he takes the stage.
And do you think that Chiweenie owners are going to be upset about this?
Yeah, we're preparing a YouTube apology video just in case we get some backlash.
Just to make this clear for myself, you think that the owners of these slack-jawed, pointy-teeth sort of scrumble-looking goblin dogs are going to be upset that you've claimed your beautiful, sweet drag queen as one of their own?
You know, I wouldn't describe Chiweenies quite that way. I think they're ruggedly handsome, but they might be offended by the disingenuine claim to Chiweenie fame.
Sure. Yeah, okay.
But now he's blazing a trail for miniature rat wawas everywhere, so.
Mutts. They're mutts. He's a mutt. I'm a mutt. It's okay to be a mutt.
So that's my news.
Thanks for that. I'm excited to see where Patricia's drag performance goes. I've come full circle on this. You may recall way back when, in the same episode that we interviewed Bruce Harrell, who's now mayor of Seattle, I had a full meltdown about dog drag. And I've decided that yes, it is probably a sin, but are we not all humble sinners? It is probably one of the most egregious things to take away the agency of an animal that already has very little agency of its own. I mean, they used to be wolves, for Christ's sakes. And now, does he like it?
I think he loves it. His face lights up when he's in drag. Yes.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, we've got a great show for you coming up. Speaking of drag, and fantastic drag at that, Gius Matencio, who goes by the stage name Geisha Star, is our guest this week. She and I have a great conversation, and I'm looking forward to that. We have some other news about drag performers as well. QPF, Queer Pride Fest, announced their headliners. Trixie Mattel is one of their headliners, along with Orville Peck, both people that I'm a huge fan of, actually. So looking forward to that. Queer Pride Fest, of course, is done by the same people who own Queer Bar and Elliott Bay and The Cuff. And I think Oddfellows now, which is Burgess and Hall are their names. They're husbands. They're a power couple. They're just fantastically well-renowned for their business acumen, and they kind of own all of the spots that I hang out on over on 11th, which is crazy. So that's a little bit of local news. Focusing on the local stuff, because the national stuff is rough. Holy shit. Something like over 400 anti-trans bills going through on the national level in state legislation, or at least being put forward, if not passing. And that's terrifying. I'm sure we can get into that some other time when we have a little bit more of the details right in front of us. But I did notice that all of these anti-trans bills, all of this legislation is going directly against any sort of American Medical Association or any medical proof at all, and it's just religious fervor or quasi-religious fervor, which is fascinating to me. It's just all incredibly hateful. Anyway, like I was saying, we do have a great show coming up for you, and we're talking about what, Dylan Mulvaney probably, and more after the break.
Hi, this is Dr. V. Hill with V. Hill Family Medicine. Ever wish your doctor knew you by name, understood where you were coming from, and listened to your unique health concerns and worries? I have built just such a practice where the focus is on you and the care delivered is in line with your values and ideals. Learn more about affirming primary care at V. Hill Family Medicine. Visit VIGILMD.com or call 253-693-0071.
March 18th and 19th, Choral Arts Northwestern Regional School and LGBTQ plus choirs mark the 25th anniversary of Matthew Shepard's death with Craig Hella Johnson's Considering Matthew Shepard. Experience the story of Matt's life and death through songs both solemn and irreverent, capturing the tragedy but also celebrating Matt's joyful love for community. With styles from Bach to musical theater, the music invites us to come together, no matter our differences. More info at www.choralartsnw.org. Joining me today via Zoom, her accomplishments, honestly, almost too many to list. I'm going to try it out anyway. President's Award for the Imperial Sovereign Court of Seattle 2023, the Grand Marshal for last year's Seattle Pride Parade. You were the first Miss Neighbors in 93. You have been a drag ambassador for Drag Out the Vote. You were Miss Gay Filipino Emeritus 2002. The list goes on and on and on, and I'll just let you explain your career for us. But I, folks, G.S. Matencio is with me today, maybe better known by her stage name, Geisha Starr. Geisha, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you so, so much for having me. It's a full circle moment, having been a contributing writer for Seattle Gay News. Then on top of that, not very many people know this, and I'm about to date myself, but Geisha Starr turns 30 in April.
Wow.
I started doing drag when I was 21 years old, and Seattle Gay News was our social media at the time. It was our Facebook, it was our Instagram. Every Friday, loading papers all across Capitol Hill and Seattle area. So it's pretty surreal to have, I think George and Angela and the SGN family probably has been my longest relationship here in Seattle.
Well, I'm glad that we could be a part of that sort of becoming for you, that in the continuation of your career and legacy. I mean, you've written for us in the recent past since I've been editor, and you always do such a great job. You also are on the board for the Seattle Imperial Sovereign Court, which is huge too. How are you? What is new with you? It's been a while.
It's been a minute. I'm just coming down from hosting and producing our 51st coronation at the Seattle Westin, where we elected our new monarchs, Rainier 48, Cakes de Ball, and Olympia 51, Sky Martini Ice. And the interesting thing about the court is before the RuPaul days, which, you know, most people associate drag with now, The Imperial Court Council, International Court Council, really were the pioneers. It was founded by Jose I of San Francisco and is now headed by Queen Nicole of the Americas, Queen Nicole I. And we have been there hopefully impacting and raising monies and awareness for all kinds of things, primarily HIV AIDS. But then our work goes through to equal rights. We were a big part of marriage equality. And then now we're really doing a lot of work with trans awareness and identity. One of the new initiatives is helping fight the ban of drag shows because people think that drag shows are, you know, dangerous.
Yeah.
And so we really have been there since, you know, the past 50 plus years with national and international chapters across the United States and Canada. I was elected Empress in 1999 when I was 27 years old, making me, I think, the youngest Empress of Seattle and the first Asian Pacific Islander Empress. And it's great to still be involved. And, you know, I was joking with a friend, all of a sudden I became somewhere between the middle to the oldest monarch or empress. You know, you spend so many of your years jumping around and doing all of these really cool things and hopefully growing with pop culture and norms and especially in the LGBT community. And now to be able to help marry our traditions of pomp and circumstance and crowning and pageantry to, you know, Venmo your girls to help raise money and all of those, and see all the different resources and all the different newer generation of queens. Mm-hmm. It's really a privilege.
And what is that like with those newer generation of, with that newer generation of queens? Because I just turned 28. I'm the youngest editor in chief of a weekly newspaper in the nation. So that's crazy to me. But the whole, everything on the scene is, in a sense, new. I know things about my contemporaries, and I know, I know how important you have been to the scene because we've worked together. But what is it like transitioning that mentality? What is it like working with millennial and Gen Z drag queens?
I think I just try very hard, being in my middle age, to really remember what it was like when I was a young Gen X, when I was working with some of the greats here in Seattle at the time, and they were inspiring me to really be the entertainer and the activist and advocate that I hope to be. I think a lot of it is patience. And I think a lot of it, though, is also balancing the enthusiasm. Mm. This last coronation, we had, you know, new title holders. And we most recently have introduced non-binary title holders, which I think is a move in the right way, in the right future, to encourage the participation of that community. A lot of the times, it's always been king and queen, or emperor, empress, or Mr. and Miss and Ms. And now it's MX or Emprex or Supreme. And I think to be able to really see that part of the community being represented and giving them the freedom of self-expression, that's what we were trying to do back in the 90s. We were just trying to represent. First, it was in the LGBT, the G, the gays had to come first forward to really kick the door open. And then the lesbians followed. And now, most recently, in the last 10 years, I would say the trans movement is finally getting its due. And along with the trans movement, with the identity, non-binary, and all of the different intersexes that make our community. So I think it's really exciting to see that, because each generation, to be honest with you, I think really serves a purpose to move the communities forward. One of the stories, Miss Gay Seattle, I believe it's 18, Smokey, told us is that when she wanted to go to do drag, she would have to enter the club as a male, get in drag, do her show, and then exit the club as a male.
Wow, that is so much makeup.
It's a lot of makeup, a lot of time. But that was just personal safety. Yeah. That was really from the police raids right around the Stonewall era. Mm-hmm. That is really what, if you wanted to do drag, that's what you had to do. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and she's, you know, the first, I believe, Asian Pacific Islander Miss Gay Seattle we've had. And we're now, I believe, on 54 or 53, maybe even more. More than the Empress number, that is the oldest title. I never won Miss Gay Seattle. I was proudly Miss Gay Seattle first runner up. And so to think that's what the generation before me did in order for me to be able to go to the bars in the 90s and do drag and have that freedom to put a wig on and high heels, I think that is what they did. And so for my generation, you know, and we really fought in the 80s and 90s. We really fought for HIV AIDS awareness. I mean, I remember people were dying when I first came out to the scene in 1993. There was not the medication, not the really care. People, you would open up the Seattle Gay News and you would see a photo in the obituary scene of, oh my God, I just saw him last week.
Yeah.
Or, oh my gosh, I didn't know. Mm-hmm. You know, and now we have places 30 years later, at least in my time, like Bailey Boucher, that is a hospice not only for HIV AIDS, but is also able to, you know, help others. And it's not just limited. And people with HIV AIDS are living much longer and healthier lives thanks to the medication. And as we get better, hopefully better access to all. So I really am thankful that we're able to continue to move forward. And I'm really excited, especially with the technology and the social norms and some of the work that I do with GLSEN, Gay Lesbian Student Education Network, where these kids can come out at a younger age to lead longer, healthier lives as their true selves, regardless of their gender or identity or sexual orientation.
So let's talk a little bit about the trans movement, and it's been getting a lot of flack from especially right-wing government officials. And Tennessee, as we're recording this, just banned drag shows, mm-hmm. which is insane. Do you think that it'll get far enough? Are you concerned? Are you worried that it'll get to this side of the country? Are you concerned that the hate will spread to the governments here or the fear? Because we do live in sort of a liberal bubble.
Absolutely. We live in a bubble. But this is the way I look at it, Asher. The fact that, you know, you look at the last administration and there were so many boundaries that broke because people just stopped caring. Mm. People stopped respecting. People had that permission, whether what they saw, you know, from our former president and the administration, to be able to say and do whatever they wanted to do. And it only just takes one barrier to come down. And then all of us should be concerned. All of us should be afraid. I work in Bellevue, yeah. and I live on Capitol Hill, and it's not the same Capitol Hill that I, you know, grew up on and or grew up in. And then I remember the last election right outside of my place of work. There were, you know, re-election Trump people just waving their signs, trying to get those votes on a Saturday afternoon. So it is there. And I do think what is the hardest thing about the drag band is while we have so much drag here in Seattle, it doesn't matter regardless of, you know, people banning a show or someone getting attacked from hate crimes on their way to their car. Anyone can be a target, especially drag queens, because we are so colorful and so visible. I still have, you know, those minds flashes of, you know, every Pride in Westlake Center, there's a demonstration of someone and that photo of Mama Tits that went viral going after, you know, finally standing up, you know, to that protester. Yeah. So I think we should always be concerned because it's all of us.
Let's jump back a little bit. How did you get started in drag? You started at Neighbors, right?
So I turned 21 in the end of January in 93. And, you know, I thought going out was just on the weekends. So Friday, Saturday, I'd go out. And at that time, I identified as gay. And so I would go out and I didn't really see too many drag queens. And then I found out and I saw on a poster on the wall, the Brass Connection, which is now the brewery Red Hook, I think. And the Brass Connection had a show for a lip sync contest on a Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. with Crystal Lane. And the thing that's very special to me about Crystal Lane is she was the 19th Empress of Seattle and I'm the 29th one. Mm-hmm. So we'll always share those that decade of in between us. And so I went on a Tuesday and Crystal was probably the very first drag queen that I've ever seen in my life. Blonde, I still remember to this day, a cream suit, gold 5-inch Frederick of Hollywood heels, that the incline of her shoe was literally like that. And just, I love the command of the stage when that time, we all sat on the floor of both bars and, you know, they did the lip syncs and it was the Whitney Houston's, the Toni Braxton's on all the 90s dance hits, which is so funny because now 30 years later, they're all remixes and all, you know, oh, this is a new song. It's like, no, it's not. It's old girl. And I remember saying I wanted to do that. And I have a feeling now in hindsight, it was a way to be able to self-express my femininity and maybe the beginning of my gender expression. Then on Wednesday night at Neighbors, Kahlua Ice and Nicole hosted their lip sync contest. So the rotation was Tuesday night, Brass Connection, Wednesday night, Neighbors, and the group of queens that were, you know, again, competing for a $50 weekly cash prize or a $100 weekly cash prize. And then they would collect six winners for a lip sync cycle of six people. And then they would compete for $250 or $300 cash, which was a very big deal. Mm-hmm. I asked a lot of people, could I, you help me be a drag queen? No one would help me. Like, they were like, no. It's like that scene in Two Wong Fu. I always joke, instead of why you crying, little Latin boy, it's why you crying, little Filipino boy. Because I could just never get it right. And so I tried and I, you know, was able to finally figure it out. And I think I looked at the time more feminine than quote unquote fish or quote unquote real. Mm. And I learned just by watching it. Very much the onstage Tuesdays and Wednesdays was my YouTube tutorial. And then I ran for Miss Neighbors. That was in August of 93. And there's eight of us, I believe. And to my surprise, I won. I was like, what? It must have been all those Miss USA, Miss Universe pageants I watched. And that was really the beginning of my drag career. I had some great highs and I had some great lows from being the first winner of the Femme Magnifique International that Darcel 15 out of Portland, Oregon still hosts to this day. Every Labor Day, we go down there and we host the show. And for many years, I was the producer of the regional pageant here in Washington, to being Miss Gay Washington in 96. And then of course being Empress. And in the 2000s and 2010s is really when I started to turn my drag and became a little bit more mainstream to public speaking and corporate settings, holiday parties, things where really the money and the mainstreamness opened. And really when RuPaul started to take off, I was one of the first show hostesses to host RuPaul Drag Race viewing parties at the then lobby, co-hosted that with two other queens. And so that really changed the trajectory of where we are with drag now.
Yeah. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't ask for some of our listeners, including myself, who are not as familiar with the drag scene and sort of the hierarchies, but what does it mean to be an emperor or empress or a supreme? What does the Imperial Sovereign Court of Seattle actually do?
So the Imperial Sovereign Court of Seattle is a 501c3 nonprofit that's volunteer-based, and what we do is raise monies primarily for scholarship funds through pageantry and drag shows. The thing that's the most interesting that a lot of people don't know, unlike organizations like Utopia or Gay City or Northwest AIDS Foundation in the past, Chicken Supergate in the past as well, is that we're not a full-time staffed nonprofit. So we are made of volunteers, primarily title holders, that meet a few times a month after work and plan out events as well as fundraisers. And it's a great way because you can, as a drag entertainer, have your own space and stage, or actually any entertainer, to learn how to perform, do drag, community organize, fundraise. And Emperor and Empress are the highest titles within the Imperial Court. The beginning titles would be Closet Ball, which is usually held over Mother's Day. And that's where we take somebody that's never done drag before and a veteran drag queen or artist, puts them in drag in an hour and it's a pageant for the best transformation. Then we have King of Hearts, which has been a mix of Valentine's Day tradition or quote unquote the Mad Hatter's Ball, again another entry level starter pageant title. Mm-hmm. King and Queen of the Seas, which is like our gay seafarer. We usually do that right around July to August around Seattle Seafair celebration. Then of course Mr. Ms. Miss and Mix Gay Seattle, which is our city ambassador title. The Imperial Gay Washington title, which is our state title holder. And then Imperial Prince and Princess, and they are the heirs to our Emperor and Empress, which basically lead the Imperial family, are the face of the court. And then all of our court, as many of them, travel to different courts. There's over 55, probably more courts across the United States and Canada. So when we talk about fundraising efforts, when we talk about things that happen regionally, for instance, banning drag shows is one of the newest initiatives that was introduced this past month as something that affects as many chapters across the United States. So that's something that we all join. Something we also did last fall was the shootings that happened in Colorado and how we raised money and awareness for gun reform and safety in LGBT spaces.
There is political power in these courts, in a sense. There's an activist streak behind all of it, and that's always been the case, it seems. Well, Geisha, thank you so much for joining me today on the show. Where can we find you online? Do you have a website? Do you have a social media presence?
So we're actually working with me and a team on kind of relaunching some things coming up this year. Some of it hopefully will be ready for Gay Pride, if not definitely Trans Awareness Week in November. But in the meanwhile, you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at GAYSHASTARR. And of course, anytime the SGN needs me for any reporting, I'll be more than happy to do that. Commentary or plugs.
And we love having you on the show. Love having you write for us. It's always a pleasure. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. Be safe, everyone.
And we're back. Thank you again so much to G.S. Matencio for being on the show. I look forward to seeing you next time. Honestly, she's just been a great help, especially she's one of the first people that I met when I kind of took over this position, along with Alexa Manila and a few others that have always been very supportive and very helpful. So thank you. Lindsay, you wanted to talk about Dylan Mulvaney, who listeners may or may not be familiar with. I know I wasn't really keeping track on her, but I saw that she was getting some hate online.
Yeah, so last year, by the time you're listening to this, listeners, it will have been exactly 1 year since Dylan Mulvaney started her journey as a transgender woman, and she's done something pretty incredible and has been documenting her transition process. She started off by doing a daily video called Days of Girlhood, where she would say, you know, this is day 3 of girlhood, day 10 of girlhood. Eventually, though, that got to be very daunting. So she's been filling in just about weekly with updates about her transition process. And over the last year, her TikTok fans have watched along as she's had facial feminization surgery. She's had laser hair removal surgery on her face. And the whole time has been just spreading so much positivity, especially in the face of so much anti-trans hatred that has been happening this past year. And now Dylan is getting ready to celebrate day 365 of being a girl with just kind of the most, if you know Dylan, it's the most Dylan thing that she could do. She is having a variety show that will be filmed at the Rainbow Room in New York City. And anybody can watch. She's just asking that you buy a ticket to the live stream. The tickets are $5. And all the profits from the night are going to be going to the Trevor Project to help end LGBTQ suicide.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's great. And people don't like her for some reason? Is it just because she's trans?
Yeah, you know, people will find a reason to hate just about anybody or anything. She really is a positive light in the world. And a lot of people do hate her because she's trans, although she's also gotten hate for being such a privileged person, which she acknowledges that, you know, oftentimes when it comes to trans women, the women that are elevated and praised and accepted in society are the ones that pass really well or can afford to have surgeries. And so she's also been trying to make it a point that her undergoing medical transitions and hormone therapy doesn't make her any more of a woman than a trans woman that is unable to do that or chooses not to do that. But she has had some hate because of that, yes.
Yeah, it's an expensive process. And, you know, there are some states where it's flat out not allowed. And it's, well, good for her. That's great. It's a very public sort of a weird celebrity thing. It's a very 21st century celebrity, this TikTok situation, isn't it?
Yes, and she's really rose to fame as an influencer because of her transition journey. She was making content before this. She was actually a performer on Broadway before this, but it's been her connection to the trans community that's really elevated her to become one of the most important influencers of the year.
Well, great.
Yeah, so if you're not familiar with Dylan, but you'd like to learn more about her, I would suggest going to daysofgirlhood.com and spending $5 to support the Trevor Project and watch this really just very positive person perform. Her show's going to include special guest stars like Jonathan Van Ness from Queer Eye. So it's just going to be a lot of over-the-top bubbly people.
It is interesting. I ended up choosing this for the front page, not above the fold, but it's one of our stories on the front page because I feel it's very important in the face of all of the, you know, anti-trans rhetoric and hate that's going on right now that we amplify and uplift trans voices and celebrate their accomplishments. But in my heart of hearts, I know that I just don't care about influencers that much. And it's one of those things where it's like, I know that it's really important to people that they see this and that they see this positive support and this very bubbly person come across their For You pages or whatever. I follow a lot of trans TikToks as well. No one this famous, but it always makes me feel better about my sort of gender journey when I see someone that I can relate to. And Dylan's maybe one of the most successful trans TikTokers out there. How did you come across her?
Just my For You page. I think I started on pretty early with the Days of Girlhood, and I was like, this is a pretty cool person. And yeah, I started following her, and I see all her videos now. And I just really love her positivity. You know, it reminds me a lot of Jonathan Van Ness. They're also another person that I love to follow on social media because it's such a dark world. And what I love about Dylan is that she acknowledges this, that, you know, you can sometimes see people with such positivity and think that it's fake or almost like toxic positive culture, you know, where it's like refusing to acknowledge all the bad things that are happening and just pretending like you live on a cloud. But, you know, she's real. She knows that a lot of shit's going down, but the best way to fight that is to just, you know, keep being joyful, because at the end of the day, that's what these conservatives want, is to rob joy from the LGBTQ community.
Yeah, I always think toxic positivity is a really interesting thing because back home, everyone has it in spades, you know. Coming from an area where everyone's like, oh, I know all these celebrities, I have this, I live here, and it's very sunny and it's beautiful, like it's posi vibes only all the time. And I have found that that's incredibly unhelpful. I started talking about toxic positivity very early on in my career, and I'm glad that people are recognizing it. But I thinking about it, it's almost as if an entire chunk of society is collectively going through the denial stage of grief.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, I definitely feel that, yeah.
No, and while I don't necessarily agree with the five stages of grief as a healthy sort of tool for people grieving, because I've worked in that, and I've gone through grief myself. I don't believe that it actually goes in stages. I think it comes in waves. But I think when people latch on to those stages, they start to emulate them for themselves. And coming from sort of the state of California in a state of denial in and of itself, I find toxic positivity terrifying and very draining. And it's nice to see someone like Dylan out there who genuinely does seem honest about being happy in the face of incredible hate and fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that that's an important difference between toxic positivity and genuine positivity. But I couldn't agree more that I think people use toxic positivity as a way to shield themselves from having to see the realities of a lot of really dark things that are happening in the world, and is the reason that we can't make progress without us getting too political again. You know, my mom is a very toxic positive person where she refuses to talk about climate change with me because it's just too negative.
Shout out Rochelle, who is a fan of the show.
She'll only listen to the first 5 minutes, so I know I can cuss 5 minutes in.
That's a bummer. Oh man, okay, cool. Anyway, what else we got this week?
Well, we've got, kind of speaking of climate change and political action, a story on the top of our front page by Benny Loy about local Congresswoman Shama Sawant, who is taking the next steps in her career to help fight for the working class with the new worker strike back party that Loy thinks might actually end up becoming a new political party in the United States that we could see on ballots pretty soon.
Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily that it's... The thing about political parties in the U.S. is there are more than the two.
Yeah.
There are a lot more than the two. I think in California, I was a registered communist, if I'm not mistaken, just because I was a sort of shitty 18-year-old and didn't know what that would mean for me in terms of the election before I kind of really dove into the political side of things. Now I'm a registered Democrat because we get to vote first.
But there are parties that come about and end up being a little bit more important. You know, yeah. The crazy boot guy isn't the same as the Green Party.
Right.
And I'm thinking that we could definitely see this new movement from Sawant and other politicians across the country, which all celebrated the launch of the Worker Strike Back Party this last week. But I think we could see that rival the Green Party as a potentially effective third party in the United States pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm hoping that this independent party does gain some sort of traction. I do appreciate the socialist message. I do appreciate the workers' union mentality, you know, or stronger together. What does end up happening often, especially after sort of the 20th century's take on politics and what we've dived into now, is that any sort of independent, any sort of third party, all it does is take away votes from other parties. So my concern going forward is, on a national scale, this may not be effective, but I think on a local scale, it could be very effective.
Especially since we've discussed this quite often, Seattle has introduced ranked choice voting, so.
Yes, yeah. This has made me more excited about ranked choice voting, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah, I think it's an exciting way to introduce third parties in a valuable area of the ballot. You know, give them more power.
And Sawant has the most sort of name and facial recognition of anyone else currently on the city council, I think, because she is so outspoken and because she has been doing it for the last 10 years. Of course, we've been speaking on the show on and off to people who are looking to take her place after she steps down. I hope to speak with more candidates, actually, going forward. But it's a very interesting time politically for Seattle because we're seeing people really take notice of local politics more than maybe national politics because it doesn't affect them in the same way. People, I think, are realizing that politicians that are on a national scale are not, or that are outside of your experience and community may not be good for you in general, or you can't really trust them to do what you think is right because they are not of the same experience and they don't have the same feel. Like, there's, it's a different vibe. Like, I talk about this a lot. Seattle has its own soul. It's still sort of figuring it out, I think. Unlike, you know, New York or San Francisco or LA, where it's like you get a vibe right away. Seattle's still figuring it out, and I think that this year it's really leaning very heavily onto its new path. And I think that's very exciting politically.
Yeah. I think also if there's anything that we can take away from current political movements that we've discussed on the show when it comes to anti-trans legislation, it is that it's local politics that are making a difference in the lives of the individual, because we have a liberal, we have a Democrat in the White House. We, for the last few years, have had Democratic Congress, and yet we've still seen the overturn of Roe v. Wade. We've seen states push to ban abortion at up to 6 weeks, and now we're seeing just incredibly awful attacks on the LGBTQ community, all of which are not being prevented or affected by the federal government or who you voted for in the last presidential election.
Yeah, and that's interesting, because a lot of political analysts have already known that, but it's good to see that a lot of people on a mass scale are realizing that, especially as we become sort of more globalized in our ideas. So it's like more ideas are going into these local activist camps and from all over the place, and creating a much more rounded approach to local political communities. I want to bring back real quick, this may be our first one of the year, a long beloved fan favorite segment before we head out. We got some Pope news, Lindsay.
Yeah, this is not our first Pope news of the year, but
it's not.
No,
okay.
We had a Pope news like a couple weeks ago, I think, when the Catholic Church announced that gay is okay federally, but not
right,
in the church.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is top religious leaders denounce anti-LGBTQ laws. That means the Pope, the Archbishop of Canterbury, and the moderator of the Church of Scotland joined in a news conference denouncing anti-LGBTQ laws. Of course, this is written by Mike Andrew, our Pope news aficionado, our religious and theosophical sommelier, if you will, here at the paper. I'm getting notes of, I'm getting notes of dirt, sort of moist rock. I'm getting some taste of old men backpedaling. What are we getting on the top note here? I'm getting that old rhetoric, being homosexual is not a crime, just a sin. Which,
yes,
it's
he's basically saying now that you shouldn't judge gay people because they're sinning. They are sinning, but so are you, because we all sin, especially according to the Catholic Church. If you have ever enjoyed happiness in your life, the Catholic Church knows you're a sinner. That's basically what they're saying.
And like I said, aren't we all humble sinners?
Should we introduce Dan before we end the show?
Oh, Jesus. We've talked about Dan on the show a little bit, but this episode, Dan is our A&E guy. He's kind of our geek news writer. We've talked about his coverage of events in the past. He's editing this for me while I'm taking a week off. I don't know what I'm going to do with that week. I'm kind of nervous about it, but several people have stepped up to fill in my place throughout. I'm very thankful for that. But thank you, Dan, for editing the show as you have been this whole time. So if it sounds a little different, it's because we got someone new working on it. Maybe it sounds better than when I do it, because I'm sick of hearing my own voice.
Also, Dan, if you could edit Ash to say, Lindsay is my best friend, that would be awesome.
I could just say that. I don't know if it would be true, though. Am I your best friend?
No,
I don't
I'm
think
your
so.
Best friend.
Oh, got it, got it.
Peter's my best friend,
okay.
In case you didn't know.
You're
my dog.
Uh-huh. I don't know if I have a best friend currently.
The position is open, listeners.
Yeah.
Whoever donates the most in the SPN.
Can God, that's so tragic. That is a tragic thing that we've put into the universe here. Hey, do you want to be my best friend, the editor-in-chief of Seattle Gay News, this lonely, sad fuck? Hey, hi, donate to the paper, and you'll be my best friend.
There's a lot of perks to being Ash's best friend.
Yeah.
You can play D&D.
You could play
D&D. You could listen to some crazy stories.
I do have a lot of crazy stories. I've lived quite a life in my 28 years. You get free sort of tangents on whatever weird political... Basically, it's like listening to this show.
Yeah. You want to feel better about your mental health? Why be Ash's best friend? Was that mean? Was that too mean?
No, it was genuinely very accurate. I appreciate your honesty.
They might even share a cigarette with you.
That's true. That is true. I'll smoke you out, sure. Whatever I'm smoking, you get a bit for free, always.
This is what you get if you donate to the SGN.
If you donate to the SGN, I'll smoke you out. I do cut my shit with lavender, though, when I do smoke weed, if I smoke weed at all. So you got that to look forward to.
Real quick before we move away from Dan, I did just want to give the update that I tried earlier before we re-recorded. Dan is a wonderful person. Dan is editing this episode. And recently I went to the Seattle Art Museum and I saw an oil painting of Jesus and I felt compelled to take a photo of it, not because I was looking into the eyes of my Lord and Savior, but because I felt I was looking into the eyes of one of my favorite coworkers, Daniel Lindsley, because he looks a lot like Jesus in this oil painting. And I took a picture and I wanted to send it to Dan, but I was too embarrassed to send it on Slack. So I might post it on our Instagram.
You're just going to broadcast it publicly instead.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
I think everybody needs to know how gorgeous our editor is this week, if they were painted in an oil painting.
And that's Pope news, everybody.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you so much for listening. Every week, it's just such a delight to come here and spaz out a little bit with you guys. And if you want more people to join the Lindsay Hive, like and share. Go ahead and give us 5 stars on Apple Music or whatever it is, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell your frenemies. Anything you want to say before we head out, Lindsay?
No, just have a great week. Enjoy your week off, Ash. And listeners at home, enjoy your week as well. Kiss your dogs for me.
You know what you guys have got to look forward to next week is our guest host, Isabel Mata. So that's exciting. I'm looking forward to listening to that as well. Well, folks, thanks again so much for listening. And go ahead and follow us at Seattle Gay News on Instagram, at radio.sgn on Instagram. We're getting our Twitter back up and running. I finally have access to it, so look for that. Find us on Facebook, Seattle Gay News. Find us anywhere you go drink coffee, pretty much. If you you can pick up the paper at any public library in Pierce County and King County, any Seattle public library. And we'll keep coming to you weekly as long as you keep checking us out. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you in the funny pages.
Radio SGN is hosted by A.V. Eichenbaum and Lindsay Anderson, and produced by A.V. Eichenbaum. Music for this show was provided by T.R.G. Banks and Jesse Spillane, or was provided for free by Anchor. Thank you so much for listening. Check us out on sgn.org or wherever you find podcasts.
This podcast is part of the Seattle Gay News Podcasting Network.